Extra time.
Hello and welcome back to the Extra Time podcast. It's me, your host, Patrick Van Straten, and this week I am joined by Doogie Critchley. Hello, Doogie. How are you?
Hello, Patrice. Yeah, I haven't been on the podcast for a little while with you. I'm looking forward to this. Yeah, no, I'm very well. I'm a little bit chilly. But yeah, Sunderland did some business this January. Unlike Arsenal, we were talking off air before we started recording. Vlahovic, you sad?
Not really. I mean, like, I obviously like signings. Like, I am a classic, like, 15-year-old football fan where I'm like, give me transfers. That's what
Absolutely.
I want. But I was never that bothered about Vlahovic as a player. I still think that there are question marks about him, and the price tag was the price you pay for somebody with no question marks. I also get really annoyed just hearing our fans like whinge and moan about like Lacazette and just like whinge about Aubameyang and everything. It's just like, you were the people who liked the Aubameyang contract when it happened. And Lacazette, okay, should he have scored the other day against Burnley? Sure. But was he bad in that game? No. Like, he was pretty good. Like, I don't know. I just think, like, this is why people hate Arsenal fans, because, like, we're entitled. So I just think, no, the football is once again good. That's enough for me. Don't really care about Vlahovic. Don't think we're going to finish top four, even if we were to get him. So not too bothered.
Yeah, it's a proper topsy-turvy season defined by having a really young team that will make mistakes and will have the odd bad result in there. But Arsenal fans, you're just riding this wave all the time that suddenly you think, you know, your top four favourites. And then I even saw title challenges in a couple of years coming out. And then suddenly, you know, you draw against Burnley, haven't scored for a few games, and it's all doom and gloom. Just be try and be a bit more consistent, a bit more regular with yourselves, and you'll get less upset.
Who did Sunderland sign, Deeks?
We signed a few different players. We signed a right back from Ireland. We signed Patrick Roberts on loan from Man City. As you know, it's permanent in the end. So I'm excited to see him play. It's a player that I've always heard a lot about without actually ever really watching him play, because he was good at Celtic when I didn't really watch a lot of I still didn't really watch a lot of Scottish football, to be honest. But then had some quite disappointing loan spells in Spain as well with Girona, etc. And then we're in talks with Clark as well from Spurs. So we're just signing all the young wingers that were once good about 3 years ago. So we'll see what happens there.
Interesting. Patrick Roberts. Yeah, that is quite, that's one of those, that's like an Adi Maghidi type, isn't it? You know, like, you see how that could be amazing.
Yeah, if he's a patch on Adi Maghidi, I'm going to be buying Patrick Roberts shirts left, right, centre. Maghidi is my guy.
Okay, well, on the topic of tricky wingers, today we're going to be talking about Sadio Mane at Liverpool and talking really about the future of that Liverpool attack, because during this period where Salah and Mane have been away at AFCON, the attack has looked pretty thin. It's really looked like Diogo Jota just doing magic. And to be fair, that's not the worst thing in the world. I think Jota's form at the moment is as good as any we've seen from Firmino or Mane during their entire time under Klopp. He's been that good. But look, Firmino, rumours he could go in the summer. Origi on his way out. Minamino has never really looked good enough. So that leaves Liverpool with Jota, Mane and Salah, who are guys that you'd be happy starting every week against anyone. But Mane is now 29. And he's not just reliant on pace. He's obviously more than that. But there are starting to creep some questions into his game, I think. Or more importantly, questions about whether this Liverpool side is going to try and run out the majority of this same team and win a title again over the next couple of years, or whether they're going to have to start thinking about a new generation to supplement the players they've got. And that might entail going for another forward. So Dukes, what do you think about Sadio Mane? What do you think about his season so far? What do you think about Liverpool's plans for the future? What would you do if you were in charge at Anfield?
Well, it's quite interesting, isn't it? I think at the start of this season, I think the big talk was Harvey Elliott and how impressive he was in the early stages of the season. And I'm still really hyped for Harvey Elliott. I'm not really sure where he's going to play when he gets back to full fitness, I should say, sorry, because at his best at Blackburn, he was on the right, which is where Salah's going to play. But then he looks like a really creative option in the middle of the park as well, and added something new to that Liverpool midfield that we haven't seen for a number of years, particularly with Thiago sort of struggling with injury last year as well. I thought Harvey Elliott looked absolutely brilliant. Then with the AFCON going on, I thought Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain's had a useful few games as well for Liverpool, scored some excellent goals. And he's a player I really, really value as well, the Ox. I think He'd be a regular for any other club, any other Premier League side except for Man City and Chelsea. And he just chose a really ambitious option in Liverpool when he left Arsenal. And I don't think he's got the game time he sometimes deserved, although he is really competitive there. He's had his injury issues, of course, as well. But then, yeah, the Mane issue, as you say, we've talked about this for a couple of years now, and thank goodness they signed Jota when they did. Thank goodness they signed him for the price they did as well, because I think now you're looking at a sort of £60 million plus fee. Back then it was 35, was it, or so? And a lot of people were questioning it, particularly online in the sort of Twitter sphere, whether he was worth that sort of amount at the time. He was coming off a mediocre season at Wolves compared to his first one in the Premier League. But he's been excellent so far. But yeah, Mane's probably the one that has sort of surprised me the most this season in terms of his slight sort of lack of quality in his finishing, really. I mean, he's still a quality player. I don't mean that disrespectfully, but his finishing has been the thing that's taken a massive drop off this year, because his underlying numbers suggest he should have way more goals and assists. I mean, he's currently on 8 goals and 1 assist in 20 games this season. His XG suggests that should be closer to 14 goal contributions. And there have been some really notable misses, particularly one-on-one with keepers, etc. He's looked slightly off in his build-up as well. His relationship with Robertson probably hasn't been as simpatico as it has been in recent times as well. Although Robertson did have an excellent game at the weekend against Crystal Palace just after we record this as well. But yeah, Mane's, it's been a strange one. I don't feel like there's anything going too drastically wrong in his game. And I don't think it's a sign that he's done at the top level or anything. I think he's just having one of those years. Like, every top player probably has a year or two in their careers where you're just like, that probably was their slight down year. And this feels like Mane's. So if they could replace Mane effectively and cheaply in the next 12 months, they've got to replace one of Firmino, Salah and Mane. They missed the chance with Firmino. They're obviously not wanting to get rid of Salah. Then Mane's got to be the guy to go, I think.
Yeah, that's the thing. Liverpool don't have infinite money here. And I think when we talk about this, sometimes people are like, oh, you saying Mane's not good enough for Liverpool anymore? And like, that's not what we're saying at all. But you can't afford to have these huge players being rotation players when you're a club like Liverpool. As I think they were really hoping that last year, obviously, you know, peak COVID, that they were going to be able to sell one of these guys. And because of the market, because it was depressed, like, they just weren't able to do that. And I think that was, they hoped that that would finance the next generation of the team. But because it hasn't happened, they're now having to really run out a very similar lineup to the one they had last season. And it's just not quite enough. So I don't know, like, I still think Mane is obviously an amazing player. But when I look at his numbers, the last couple of seasons, they've taken a bit of a change. So the last couple of years, his shots have crept up to over 3 for the first time since he's been in England. But his key passes have gone down this season really dramatically, from nearly 2 to just 1. He's also pressing the least he has since he arrived at Liverpool. He's in the bottom 28% of forwards for presses, and his dribbling's at an all-time low. His dribble success rate's at an all-time low. So look, what you've got here is a guy who's still an amazing player, because he's still at, I think, 0.73 expected goals and assists per 90, which is hyper elite. But you're seeing that his role has been changed to continue getting the best out of him. Well, when you've got a bunch of guys who are aging, and they do actually have that in that team, you know, Thiago, obviously Henderson, Firmino, Mane, even Salah it'll happen with. Van even Dijk, guys like Van Dijk. Yeah, exactly. You can't change the way the team plays to accommodate all of those players. If you have too many players who slow down overnight, then you end up with a situation like you've seen in some of Liverpool's games this season, where they ran out of midfield, you know, featuring, say, Henderson and Milner, and you think, oh my God, like, this doesn't even look mid-table, this midfield anymore. So I think that they are going to have to try and find a way around this, whether it means selling Mane or whether it means bringing in somebody young who can at least take some minutes away from all three of their, you know, main forwards. So the question is really, like, the sort of player that they need to do that. And I mean, I was kind of thinking about, like, the characteristics I thought that player would need. And I was like, great goal scorer, really creative, dangerous one-on-one, strong, hardworking. And I was just like, okay, so a complete player, like, just as good as it gets, or somebody who could be as good as it gets. So I don't know, Dukes, like, should we get into it? Should we have a talk about the kind of players that they could potentially look at this summer? Because I think we've made our case there that, like, this is a player they're going to need. And to be fair, the rumour mill kind of backs us up on this, right? Like, they have been linked to a variety of forwards. And it does seem like that's going to be maybe the big business they do in the summer, along with potentially a midfielder, I suppose. So where should we start, Dukes? Is there a player here who's piquing your interest?
Yeah, I mean, I think before we begin, I think it's worth saying that I think we were talking before we started recording that obviously you can go one of two ways with this. You could sign an out-and-out striker, sort of physical number nine, play Jota on the left. But I think Jota's just been so effective through the middle this season, and his finishing is just so brilliant that that almost feels like a bit unnecessary, really. And it's probably cheaper and more effective to sign a left winger that you can develop, who's in that age range between 21 and 25, and let them sort of develop into the next Mane and Salah and get them for 40 to 60 million pounds and hope that they turn into that 100 million pound player. Obviously, you know, if they get the opportunity to sign Erling Haaland this summer, they should do that. But I don't think it's really realistic. So the player that I'd most like to suggest, I think there's two very good shouts in the Bundesliga, and I think we'll come on to the second one in due course. But I think the outstanding, probably the outstanding attacking player that's not Lewandowski or Haaland this year in the Bundesliga has been Christopher Nkunku. And he's been absolutely frightening, phenomenal for RB Leipzig for a couple of years now. But this year, he's played in a variety of different roles, which I think has just been most impressive as well. And lots of the games that I've caught of Leipzig, particularly in the Champions League, when André Silva was particularly struggling under Jesse Marsch, he plays centrally and he was playing almost as an out-and-out striker. He can drop in and play as a 10, but he's best off that left wing as well. And he's been absolutely brilliant so far this season. He's got 16 goals and assists in just over 1,600 minutes. And he's operating at nearly 0.8 goals and assists per 90. So basically the same as Sadio Mane. And that's his third consecutive season of delivering those sort of numbers. And he's just one of those players that has got increasingly calm in front of goal. I think you tend to notice that with players as they sort of get into their mid-20s, that they just sort of relax a bit in front of goal. The game seems to come to them a bit easier. They don't panic as much. And that just seems to be the biggest difference with Nkunku right now. But he's got an excellent eye for a pass as well. His dribbling's absolutely brilliant. 2.2 dribbles per 90, a 57% success rate. So that's, I mean, the success rate could be higher potentially, but that's still a very solid number. And yeah, Leipzig play a very full-on, a lot of one-on-one football as well. That sort of vertical style, particularly under Jesse Marsch, it's slightly changing under Tedesco now. But yeah, and Nkunku would often face, you know, very high-line defences that would come right up in his face. So 57% take-on completion rate isn't too bad at all. And I just think I've been so impressed with the way his game has evolved over the last couple of years. And he looks like an absolute shoe-in to hopefully make an impact for France at Qatar 2022 as well, with so much competition in that area. And Kingsley Coman doing very well at Bayern Munich as well. Ousmane Dembele's obviously had a really difficult time at Barcelona, and they are probably looking for that new generation of wingers to really come through and establish themselves in the French national setup. Although we do know, obviously, that Didier Deschamps has his favourites. But Nkunku, I think you could probably get him for around £60 million, which I think with the way he's going and his projection right now, delivering in the Champions League, in the league, got that hat-trick against Man City, which, I mean, how often does a player get a hat-trick against the Pep Guardiola side? I just think Nkunku's going in a great direction, and I think he'd be a wonderful addition to this club side.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the versatility is such a big factor, because you're totally right. Like, I mean, if you could get Haaland, but having the ability to vary who plays through the middle, having the ability to have all your attackers rotate, I mean, during the game, is just one of the things that makes Liverpool's attack so devastating. Like, no one of their forwards is a one-dimensional threat. And Nkunku, yeah, perfect age, really creative, has even been more creative in the past. Even if you were to, like, say, oh, Bundesliga tax, because I'm sure that's something that people are thinking. Even if you were to talk about that, I think if he were to lose half his production this season, he would be scoring and assisting at the same rate as Sadio Mane this season, you know? So it's even if you were to say, like, look, this is not an accurate picture of how good he'd be in the Premier League, though, of course, you know, it's worth bearing in mind that Firmino came from the Bundesliga and Salah came from Serie A. I think that there's enough here that you think, This is a Liverpool quality player. And a thing that really stood out to me in his numbers, and we don't often talk about this, is his ability to receive progressive passes. So a progressive pass, according to football FB ref, is a pass that moves the ball 10 yards at least closer to goal, or that moves possession into the penalty area. And Mane is incredible at this. Like, he receives 11 or 12 progressive passes per game. He's done that the entire time he's been at Liverpool. That puts him in the top 2% of forwards. Well, Nkunku's doing it 12 times a game this campaign as well. So he's not just a striker. He's not just a winger. He's not just an attacking midfielder. He's the guy they look for every time they get the ball. He's the guy who's always open. And I think if you have that instinct for finding space, then you will always be able to have some sort of impact. And I think he'd actually find that he had more space if he was playing with Liverpool, because teams are always going to focus on Salah over him. Teams are always going to focus on Jota over him. And I think that would probably really help him early doors. But yeah, if he's 60 million, I kind of think that's a no-brainer. He should really be a target for basically any team who needs a forward, because he could do anything. But should we talk about another guy then who's also been linked for a similar amount? Because this is one of the main rumours, I guess, flying around, which is Luis Diaz, the Colombian winger at Porto, who's a little bit older than Nkunku, just a little bit. He's 25. He's got 14 goals and 4 assists in 1,500 minutes this season. So absolutely huge numbers. Though XG suggests he should be closer to about 13 goals and assists. And I look at that and I think, well, 13 goals and assists in 1,500 minutes is very, very good, but it's Portugal, you know, it's Portugal. Yeah. I don't know, Dukes, how much have you watched of him? He, I think, like Nkunku, though, makes a lot of sense positionally. Like, this is a guy who's going to play off the wing, but is a huge goal threat from there. That's kind of what we need at Liverpool.
Mm-hmm. I think, yeah, I was going to come out with it. I mean, just to be totally honest, I don't watch FC Porto on a weekly basis. I catch them in the Champions League on occasion, but I'm not going to say that I'm a Luis Diaz expert. But yeah, his numbers in that competition are really impressive. And, you know, we haven't seen that many wingers go straight from Portugal to the Premier League in recent years and really deliver. Obviously, Bruno Fernandes is a bit of a unique case, and he's been, you know, carried that, you know, form and goal output and assist output pretty seamlessly from Sporting CP. But Luis Diaz would be a little bit of a different factor. He's also slightly older at 25 as well. For £60 million, it just feels like a slight more of a risk. But having not watched him week in, week out, I couldn't really say. He also just feels, you know, if they got Jota for about £40 million in the end, was it? Well, with add-ons, maybe it was rising a little bit higher than that. £60 million for a player out of FC Porto seems a little bit of a risk. I mean, FC Porto did just loan out Sergio Oliveira, one of their best players, to Roma mid-season. So I think they're just being slightly dragged over the coals price-wise on this one. But then having not watched him week in, week out, maybe he is worth it. I just couldn't really bank on it in the same way that I could, you know, an Nkunku or a Moussa Diaby, who we're going to come on to in a little bit. Because even though there is this Bundesliga tax idea, I think it's slightly ridiculous, to be honest. Yes, Sancho, in a really difficult season for Man United, hasn't hit the ground running at all. I'm not even going to pretend he's been anywhere close to his level. But I think Kai Havertz, in bits and fits and starts, has been really good for Chelsea. Obviously scored a Champions League winning goal. And I think if you know, take into account the COVID that he's got, has he got COVID twice, the injuries he's got, the fact that no Chelsea attacker has really hit the ground running since arriving, at least the ones they've signed in the last 2 years. It's really Mason Mount who's been the most consistent attacking player. So I'm not totally on board with this Bundesliga tax idea. And as you say, Firmino came from there, Son came from there. I think it's a little bit dismissive to rule out all attacking players coming from the Bundesliga. So yeah, I'd prefer to go down the Bundesliga route personally than the Premier League route on this one.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about Diaz's age is that, like, I can understand why they'd want a guy who's young enough that he's going to put in, like, a good half decade at the club, but old enough that he's not a project. Like, we've talked in the past, you know, they've been linked to Pedri, they've been linked to Florian Wirtz. Those would be great players. If they can get them, they should get them. But I think, you know, they've got that project in Harvey Elliott. Like, I don't think that you want to be, you know, hanging your attack around the neck of like another 18-year-old. Like, that just doesn't seem like sensible business. So as good as guys like, I mean, Szoboszlai is having a great season as well. Like, as good as guys like that are, they're still relatively early on in their development. I think Liverpool can afford to shop at a slightly higher level. I mean, okay, so Moussa Diaby, you mentioned him there. What is it about Diaby that you think really fits Liverpool so well?
I think it's the way he's linked up with Schick and Wirtz this year, which I've been so impressed with. It's the way he cuts in off that left-hand flank, and he plays with his head up so effectively, and you often see that with Mane as well, the way he drives inside, looks for that overlapping fullback as well, or is perfectly capable playing a 1-2 and trying to make a nice run into the box. And Diaby's really improved that, I think, this year. You can tell that he's been sort of well coached from a young age. Both Nkunku and Diaby came through the PSG Academy before going to Bayer Leverkusen and RB Leipzig respectively. But I think more so than Nkunku, I was probably thought Diaby had further to go until this year than Nkunku. Maybe he still does as well. But I think his calmness in front of goals really improved, that same quality that I was talking with Nkunku. And it's just his general link-up play. He looks really comfortable in tight spaces and open spaces. He's really pacey. He'd stretch the defence as well, which Mane's done so effectively for a number of years now. So I think he's on a really nice trajectory.
Yeah, I mean, to me, though, this feels like a little bit like money's tight, this move. Like, I really love Diaby. And if we were talking about, like, Arsenal or Spurs getting him, I'd be like, great, would be an amazing get for them. Mm. But I think in this case, because we're looking for this specific role on the left-hand side, and Diaby is a lefty, I don't think he's quite as good a fit there. I don't think that you could play him through the middle. So this would basically mean Jota becomes a striker, right? And is Harvey Elliott left-footed as well?
He is left-footed, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, I know it's not that big a deal. Like, if they're great players, they're great players. But to me, like, having four players in your attack and three of them are left-footed is just, like, not my preferred
I think Diaby's pretty ambidextrous, to be fair.
Okay, but I mean, yeah, he like you say, he's got really high technical level. He would give you a decent amount of defending on the flank. He hasn't been doing it much this season, but historically he's been a good defender on the flank. And he's also historically been an amazing dribbler, which has gone down this season as well. Like, his dribbles previously have been up near the 4 mark. Now they're down to under 2, and success rate's really down. So I don't know if that's him trying to take it on in different areas, like playing slightly differently. I mean, to me, though, the real deal breaker here, insofar as there is one, obviously, you know, they could still get him, it'd be great, is that he's just a bit lightweight. Like, I mean, don't get me wrong.
He's a skinny guy.
He's got a low center of gravity, so he's good at wriggling away from pressure. He's certainly not weak, but Mane is like a real physical presence, despite not being that big. So is Jota. And so, I think, would be Nkunku. I kind of think that you need that. Like, Salah is wiry. He's small, but he's incredibly strong.
He's so strong, yeah.
And I'm not sure that that's Diaby's thing. Like, he's 5 centimetres shorter than Nkunku and Mane, who are not the tallest guys. He's 4 kilograms lighter than Nkunku and Mane. Like, these things, they sound small, but I think they do make a big difference in the Premier League. And I think they'd make his adaptation period a little bit longer. So, look, I mean, love the player. Would love him to come to the Premier League. Not sure that I necessarily think Liverpool, the left side of Liverpool's attack, is the best fit for him. But
it's a big step.
I could be wrong about that. And I think that definitely the Bundesliga is a place that they should be looking. Like, I completely agree. Like, this is a league that turns out technically gifted, like high pressing, physically adept players. Like, that is what it does again and again. And I would still put all the money I have on Sancho being one of the best players in the league in the next couple of years. I still think that that's bound to happen. So,
I like it. That's backup boy.
Yeah. So I think that, like, yeah, the Bundesliga to me is still where I'd go if I was looking to find talent. But maybe it's worth looking at another sort of player. So Jota, obviously, you know, La Liga pedigree. Championship pedigree. Maybe we can repeat the trick with a move for Arnaud Danjuma, or Groeneveld, whatever you want to call him, who is at Villarreal this season, and he's been linked with Liverpool as well. Now, I've got to be honest, Dukes, this is not my favourite move. I like the player. When he's played, he's been absolutely incredible. He's got 7 goals and assists in 800 minutes in the league, but he's got 800 minutes in the league. And that's it. You know, 0.71 XG per 90, great. But 800 minutes. I mean, the thing that could give you a bit more confidence here is that last season he had that huge year in the Championship. 22 goals and assists. You know, that's really impressive in a really physical league. Players coming up from the Championship to the Prem now tend to translate pretty well. Over the last 5 years, I'd say we've seen that the Championship is a really good proving ground for Premier League players. But also the thing is with Danjuma, I think he's more of a forward. Like, I don't know, Dukes, have you watched much of him? And like, what is it that you think has attracted Liverpool if the rumours of their interest are real?
Well, I think what attracted them initially was probably just that pure output in the Championship with Bournemouth, because his season before, when he was signed by Eddie Howe, when they were in the Premier League, he then had that really injury hit year, barely got going at all. I don't think he got a goal involvement in, was it about 13 appearances in the Premier League? Then absolutely exploded in the Championship last year. And to be fair, I was a little sceptical when he went to Villarreal, because Unai Emery, we know what sort of work rate he demands from his forwards. Danjuma, his tackle and interception numbers were sort of abysmal at Bournemouth. He was just given a completely free run, or completely free reign, I should say, at Bournemouth to basically cause damage in the final third. And he did it really effectively. But yeah, it is a little strange about this lack of minutes, as you say. I tried to do some digging into it, and he's been out since about sort of end of November, start of December. And Villarreal apparently are a really secretive club about people's injuries, and they haven't really specified how long he's going to be out for or what's really the problem with him. Apparently it's some sort of ankle injury or something similar. But Unai Emery is notorious for not giving much away in terms of injuries, particularly during this sort of COVID period. Maybe it's sort of long COVID. I mean, I wouldn't want to speculate, to be honest. I've got no idea. So don't take that as gospel, really. But yeah, he's been impressive at Villarreal, to be fair. Enormous shot numbers, 4 shots, but just 0.6 key passes per 90. And I'm not sure he's necessarily the sort of team player that Klopp would go for. And I think Nkunku, with having played under Nagelsmann, and Diaby with Gerardo Seoane, who dominate possession in you know, further up the pitch than probably Villarreal do and don't sit as deep as them, they're more used to interchanging with teammates in more dangerous areas than probably Danjuma, who's being used as a sort of counter-attacking threat or the sort of pistol on the end of Emery's sort of rifle, as it were. No, you don't get a pistol on the end of a rifle. You know what I mean. The final bullet into the goal. That's probably the worst analogy I've ever pulled out, ever.
Pistol on the end of the rifle. That's such a Zachism.
That is a proper Zachism, actually. I'm going to message him afterwards saying add that to your list under Doogie. But yeah, Danjuma, I think he's been really impressive, as you say, when he's played for Villarreal. Pretty much got Villarreal in with a chance of qualifying out of the Champions League. He was very solid during that group stage as well. But yeah, I'm not quite sure whether he's got the sort of team ethos necessarily that Klopp would look for.
Yeah, I mean, if they were to get him, I suppose if you were to get him with the intention of playing him through the middle and say, well, you know what, we're getting a guy who is better at dribbling than your average centre forward, then that's kind of fair enough. He is better. Like, he's more mobile than a lot of centre forwards. But I don't think he's going to drop deep and link the play like Firmino. He's not going to be just like an enormous penalty box presence like a Haaland. He's certainly not going to pull wide and create as well as Liverpool kind of expect their forwards to do. So unless the plan is, like, long term, we're going to evolve this team to a 4-2-3-1 with Harvey Elliott in there as well, and we are going to just play a centre forward who plays as a centre forward, which would be a perfectly reasonable thing to do. I don't really understand it. And even if Liverpool were to make that decision, I think they could go out and probably get a Lautaro Martinez type. Who could do that for them. I think they could probably go and get, you know, maybe not this player, but an Ollie Watkins kind of player who's capable of pulling wide as well, who's decent at dribbling, who's a decent creator, but is also just a big guy in the box, good at getting on the end of chances. Like, there are so many different ways that this attack can evolve, but it's important to remember that, like, Mane and Salah are getting to the age where the game will need to start to change. And to say that isn't like a criticism. It's just like, this is what happens. Like, teams can't afford to say, like, this has been an amazing player for us, we're not going to change anything. They have to think about what comes next. They have to think about what the next iteration of the team looks like. So, yeah, personally, Danjuma, not for me. Are there any wild cards we're missing here, Dukes? Is there anybody else? Because, you know, obviously Jota, they were able to get that bargain from within the Premier League. And who knows, if Pedro Neto had been fully fit this season, maybe that's a name that we'd hear linked. We've heard some Leeds names linked in the past. Like, is there anybody who stands out who we're not considering here?
Well, just before we go on to the wildcards, I just thought it was worth mentioning that it's that you're talking about, you know, building the next iteration of this Liverpool side. And what's a little bit concerning for a Liverpool fan is that Klopp's contract is up in 2 years' time now, in 2024. And will he want to extend and build another great side? Because, yeah, as we said, it's throughout the side, really, that, you know, there are big players leaving. Like, they've strengthened very well at centre-back now. They've got good backup in Konate and Gomez and Phillips as well. But Matip and Van Dijk probably have got 2-3 years left at the top. Salah and Mane, probably fewer as forwards. And then their midfield, you know, James Milner will likely retire in the summer. You can't bank on the fitness of Naby Keita or Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain. Some of their other recruits that they've strengthened in recent years, like Minamino, just don't look quite at Liverpool level yet. So there are various things to think about. But yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if Liverpool were continuing to scour domestically as well, not just in the Premier League, but in the Championship as well. We've seen Jared Bowen be linked with the club in the past. I think he's been excellent this year for West Ham. He's got a bit more of that sort of swagger about him than he did in his first year or so at in East London. I think he's been absolutely excellent, particularly recently as well, when Mikel Antonio slightly had a drop-off in goal-scoring form, at least. But yeah, I mean, in terms of the obvious ones, I mean, Rafinha would be excellent for Liverpool. The only issue is that he plays on the right-hand side conventionally. He's got that wand of a left foot, quite similar in sort of style to Salah. So we're probably looking at someone who plays off the left, really. A player that's consistently linked with the big teams in Europe and has done really well for a number of years now for club and countries, Mikel Oyarzabal as well. Mm. Does have a big asking price. I think it was around 70 million a few years ago for Man City. I'm not totally sure he's a Man City type player. I think they were looking at him when Leroy Sané was deciding whether he wanted to go to Bayern Munich or not. And he is quite similar to Sané in that he's predominantly left-footed, does cut inside and fires off a high amount of shots as well, but is good at getting to the byline as well, Sané sort of style. So he's potentially be one I'd look at as well. But I think of those players, I think Jared Bowen is probably the most likely out of Rafinha, Jared Bowen and Oyarzabal for me.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I feel like there are a lot of players in the Premier League who I would quite like to see at Liverpool, but I'm just not sure whether they're going to happen.
It's a step up, isn't it? It's that step up.
Well, yeah, I mean, I do think that the kind of Wolves level is the ideal level to make the move to Liverpool, or, you know, Everton, but you're not going to get a player out of Everton if you're Liverpool, because I could see a Richarlison there. Mm. I could see him playing this Mane role, and I think he'd be really interesting to see, like, huge physical presence, really good, essentially striker scoring numbers, but from a wide role. I think he's dying to play in an attack that actually functions for once.
Never been that popular with the Liverpool team, though. I think he gets himself into a lot of trouble every derby, really.
Well, and it doesn't matter. I mean, like, it's just never, ever going to happen. But, like, I don't know. It's Oyarzabal would be really interesting to see in the Premier League, but again, feels a little bit lightweight. I think the same goes for João Félix, who, you know, otherwise profiles like this kind of player. But I think, I think, if Klopp could pick anyone, I truly wonder if he might say, if he would pick, like, Martinelli.
Oh, he does like Martinelli. He's always flirting with him.
Yeah, and Martinelli, you kind of see the similarity, right? You know, he kind of is a striker, but playing wide, but he's been reasonably creative as well. He's got unbelievable intensity and pace. If he develops into the player that he could be, then he'd be ideal for a Liverpool team. But you're absolutely right. Like, he's a project. He's a project right now, especially given his fitness. And is Klopp going to be around for the end of that project? It kind of feels like it would be hard to imagine Liverpool without Klopp at this point. But it is a big thing to commit to. Having gone to all the effort to build an amazing side, and yes, you won a Champions League, but you only won a single league title, and this season you're miles off the pace against a team that doesn't have a striker. I mean, it's kind of demoralising. So I'm not really sure. I think, yeah, something a bit more finished. I'd love to see Pulisic, like, come out of Chelsea and go there.
Oh, now we're talking.
Well, you wonder, okay, this is a slightly separate question, but I'd like to get your thoughts on this. Given what we said about how Liverpool were potentially needing to sell in order to build the new iteration of their side, and given the fact that finances are still really strapped across Europe, are the bigger Premier League teams going to have to start selling to one another if they want to move players on? Because if Chelsea want to get rid of Pulisic this summer, they're either going to have to take an enormous loss on his fee, you'd imagine, Or they're going to have
cost,
to...
He cost 60-odd, didn't he? Yeah.
Yeah, or they're going to... And I don't know what his wages are, but they're not going to be under 100. So either they're going to have to take a big loss, or they're going to have to let him go to a Liverpool, a Spurs, an Arsenal type of team. It'd be quite interesting to see him go to Liverpool.
Mm. Yeah, it's been about 10 or so years since we've seen big money moves between Premier League clubs, and it was consistently, it was like Arsenal selling to Man City, it was Arsenal selling to Man United in the case of Van Persie,
yeah.
Spurs sold Berbatov to Man United, Spurs sold Robbie Keane to Liverpool in a move that didn't really work out, but we haven't really seen that in the last 4 or 5 years. I think clubs have become even more insular in protecting their assets, and even clubs like Man United, they don't want Jesse Lingard. They haven't used him for about 2 years now, and they still won't sell to clubs that aren't even of their caliber. Like, they're afraid of selling to West Ham in case they lose their European place to them. Like, clubs have just become way more aware of financial ramifications, and I think that's even going to be more so of the case when they're still trying to deal with the loss of or the losses created from COVID as well. So Champions League qualification and European qualification is everything to these clubs this year. So I'm not really surprised. But I can't really see the unwanted players at Liverpool and Chelsea and Man United necessarily passing down a rung of the ladder too much over the next few years, because we know how cash-strapped Italian clubs are. We know how cash-strapped French clubs are and Spanish clubs are. And there are massive bargains to be had in those markets, whereas there just really aren't that many bargains to be had in Premier League, in the Premier League, I should say, amongst that top calibre of player. Like, look at someone like Harry Maguire, like, excellent player when he's at his best. He's been terrible this year, but that's just, you know, he's just going through a tough time. But he cost about 30, 40 million pounds more than he should have. There are the occasional bargain to have. You know, we've already talked about Jota, but I just don't think there are that many, particularly between top four and top four clubs. Like, Chelsea would not let Pulisic go to Spurs without them paying a really handsome fee for him.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess it's just difficult because I get what you're saying about European qualification, but European qualification isn't actually worth that much money relative to a couple of big sales. You know,
true.
Like I suppose obviously there's a cost there that's hard to quantify, in the if you don't get into the Champions League, you can't buy good players, you might not get into the Champions League again. Like, these all these things affect it. But I don't know. I suppose on the one hand, we've seen teams like Arsenal continue to buy players who really they shouldn't have had access to, given that they were outside the Champions League. So it clearly is possible. And yeah, I just think you sell a player for £40 million when otherwise you would have sold them for 25. You only need to do a couple of those before you're really making the money that you make from the Champions League. Like, it's not that much money.
I'd suggest on the Arsenal point, you do have very wealthy owners to begin with, and they have, you know, committed a lot in the years that you've been outside the Champions League, really ineffectively under Emery with Mislintat and some of those signings as well. But I think there, you know, you have spent a lot of money, particularly last summer. And then Arsenal's always going to be an attractive project because it's a really glamorous club, great stadium, North London, etc. You know, one of the nicest cities on earth, well, in some respects at least. And then players are also sort of buying into the sort of journey that Arsenal are going on, and they see the Smith Rowe's coming through, the Saka's coming through, and they're sort of bargaining on what the team is going to be like in 2-3 years' time. So I can continue to see Arsenal and clubs like that, and maybe even to a lesser extent West Ham, now they've got a solid foundation going forward, continuing to really sort of punch above their weight in the transfer market and manage to assign more attractive players and better players than they probably should do given their league position in the last few years, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. It'll be interesting to see how far that pulling power goes over the next couple of summers, because it's only going to increase. We're only increasing at the moment the number of teams who are trying to get into the Champions League who have really great managers, and it'll be interesting to see, for instance, how much sway Conte has in the market if Spurs don't get Champions League. How much sway Man United have in the market if they don't get Champions League? I really don't know what to predict from this summer's transfer window, but I'm kind of impatient to get there and get out of this January one. So, Dukes, all the players we've looked at, I feel like I know the answer to this, but who would you pick if you were Jurgen Klopp or whoever's now in charge of transfers at Liverpool?
I'm going for Kylian Mbappe on a free, obviously, if possible.
Clearly.
But no, of the ones we've mentioned, I'm going for my boy Christopher Nkunku. I think he's a really special player and his numbers are getting better and better and he's on a great trajectory. And I don't think the adaption from RB Leipzig to Liverpool and Klopp would be as dramatic as it could be for, say, Luis Diaz, for example.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think that he is the outstanding candidate. Like, just can do absolutely everything. Good age, style of play, kind of fits the club, ready to go. So that's our take on what Liverpool could do if they decide to replace Sadio Mane this summer. If we've missed out any obvious shouts, let us know in the comments below. Doogie, have you got anything to plug before we say goodbye?
Yeah, sure. Why don't you go over to Eurofootball Daily on YouTube and check out our Monday content where we talked about Tanguy Ndombele's potential loan move to Spurs. And then on Tuesday, we broke down the Vlahovic move to Juventus and all the facts and figures around that move on Euro Transfer Talk.
I think you mean Ndombele's loan move to PSG, right?
Did I say to Spurs?
You said to Spurs.
I did not mean that. To PSG, obviously. Apologies,
I do not think Spurs would pay a loan fee for Tanguy Ndombele. Yeah, right,
imagine
now.
That now.
Yeah, thank you very much, Dukes. And thank you to you for listening or watching at home. Make sure that you subscribe to the channel, Football Daily Podcast, on YouTube, or subscribe to the podcast using whichever podcast app you favour. And we will see you next time. Thanks for watching or listening. Bye.